Now that we have discussed assessment centers, the way they are administered, the kind of tools that are used, and the advantages, let us turn our focus to the selection interviews. As we know, friends, an interview is one of the most common ways or one of the most common selection tools as a part of the selection process. Virtually all organizations use interviews as a selection device for most jobs. Many of us have been through this particular phase of interviewing. We know that we at least meet two people from different departments that interview us for our skills, for our competencies, and the way we give the interviews. HR specialists and people who will be candidates' immediate supervisor conduct a lot of these interviews. So ideally, in many of the organizations, the first round probably is with either the HR specialist or the operations specialist, or vice versa. In case of certain management cadre people, they might have even three or more rounds of interviews, in which the last round probably will be with a very senior person from the department, probably the department head or the president of the particular company. So we shall move on with more discussion on the interviews. Now, interviews, as we see, are quite common. They are quite prominent in the field of selection process and in recruiting. But there are certain problems associated with interviews regarding their reliability, regarding their validity, and other errors. So, as a recruitment professional or person probably who needs to be very efficient with recruitment management, some discussion, some insight on these factors also needs to be understood. So, a lot of research has gone into certain practices related to the reliability of interviews. This process is the reliability is determined when two or more interviewers come to a consensus or an agreement about the kind of results that they have drawn from a particular interview. So, this is called as an inter-rated reliability between two interviewers. This factor is considered to be quite contrasting to be low when you consider two different interviewers. A lot of times, the kind of interrelatability is quite low. There is a huge or a marginal, a huge difference between the kind of ratings for the same candidate provided by two different interviewers. The next point is the validity of the interview. This is actually an understanding of how well a person will perform on a job based on an interview. So, if the interview has been very good, it's been excellent, it's not necessary that the person will perform really well for that particular job. So, certain studies which were conducted in late 60s and 70s, they showed that there was a definite low validity in cases, but in recent times, it's shown that the validity has increased, at least in some of or a few of the job-related competencies. Thus, we can consider that the validity has grown, it's become better. So, whatever has been interviewed, at least for some competencies, the person performs well if he's been rated high or she's been rated high in the interview process. Let's move on to the next few things. There are two errors that a person who's recruiting should refrain from, should understand, and should be able to eliminate during the recruitment, the interviewing process. The first one is the similarity error. Here, what happens is if a candidate's behavior or a candidate's personality is quite similar to the person who's interviewing them, then the interviewer has a chance of being biased, has a chance of having a prejudice towards the person who's being interviewed, that's the prospective candidate. So, the candidate at times has been given interviews or has understood the mentality of the recruitment professional, can easily mirror the ways and means, the behavior of the recruitment professional. So, this is an error which needs to be understood and, refrained from. Otherwise, a lot of undesirable candidates will be recruited in the organization. The next being the contrast error. Now, here what happens is if there's a long list of interviewing that is done by the recruitment professional, the recruiter might have a chance of comparing two or more candidates. Let's work with examples. Let us say Ramesh Swami, a hypothetical recruiter in one of the manufacturing companies, is conducting 20 interviews in a particular day. Now, he is on his fifth interview. He's already interviewed four people. The last two people that he's interviewed were extremely poor with their communication and the knowledge of required for a particular position. Now, the fifth person who walks in is slightly better at the communication as well as the knowledge of the processes. So, what happens is, this person is not rated as an average by Ramesh, but is rated as of a high quality because of this particular error, which is called as the contrast error, in which he begins comparing this particular candidate, the fifth one, with the last two. Similarly, in a contrasting situation, let us say Ramesh has interviewed 16 candidates. The previous couple of candidates, the 14th and the 15th, were of a very high quality. They were very good, they were fluent with the English, they had a good understanding of the manufacturing practices. So, the 16th candidate, unfortunately, is average, is not poor, but is average with the communication as well as knowledge of manufacturing processes. So, this candidate is bound to be eliminated by Ramesh, because he will be compared with the previous candidates and eventually be shown as a poor candidate. So, this is another error which needs to be understood and eliminated while doing the interviewing. A few more errors, the first one being the first impression error. So, many candidates are adept at creating a good first impression by the way they dress, by the way they talk, and recruiters for their part should not be impressed just by reading the application blank provided or the resume of the person, or just looking at the person. There should be a thorough analysis done in order to reduce this particular error. So, recruiters should not, or interviewers should not, select people based on the first impressions. There should be a thorough analysis done of the candidate in order to reduce this error. The next is the traits rated and the halo error. Now, certain traits or certain attributes of the personality of a person might create this kind of an error. They might be particularly good at a few things, like possibly having assertive body language, but they might probably have poor knowledge of the process. Hence, they might create a halo. A halo is nothing but a bright spot, or you can say a very good impression about certain traits or a few qualities. So, the interviewer is, he gets into a halo effect, or he is only able to rate those traits which are displayed in an efficient manner. So, the other traits or the other parts of the personality are ignored, and on this basis, selection is done in the interview. Later on, the candidate might, come out to be a person who probably might end up with conflicts, might possess poor technical knowledge, and be only competent in one or two skills, which is definitely not required, definitely does not match up to the expectations of the job position. So, people, these two important errors along with the previous errors should be looked at and eliminated. Now, with the help of this particular diagram, we are looking at patterns and types of interviews. So, there are three different types of broad interviews that we need to understand. Here we are discussing and enlisting them. So, the very first is the single one-on-one, which is quite common. This happens at probably certain junctures where specific operations heads or HR specialist need to meet up with the candidate in order to understand them in a better manner. The pro for this particular, or the benefit, is that there is less chaos. There is less lack of attention from both the interviewer and the interviewee. Here you cannot judge the team skills and the interpersonal or the intrapersonal skills with other people. Here you cannot judge the synergy based skills and decision making skills. The next type is the group interview. Here there are multiple people sitting for the interview. Things like an extempore session, a case study session, a team based group discussion. These things are a part of this particular group interview. Quite common where there are mass ramp ups or there are multiple people in the selection process, and where the interviewers need to select quite a few people from a huge number of people. The advantage is that people can be analyzed, how they work in a team, how assertive can they be, how well and how, you know, confidently do they portray themselves when they are seated in a group, can they voice their own opinions. All these kind of things are understood through the group interview. The problem here is there might be some chaos, some disturbance, because of which either the interviewee or the interviewer might not be able to analyze people in a methodical manner. The final one is the panel or the board interview. We've noticed many of examples even in the Hollywood and the Bollywood films about these. If you recollect people who watched Three Idiots, the movie, one of the central characters in that particular movie was subjected to a group interview where there were people who had come from the industry. Group interviews can have senior members like the department heads, the HR specialists, and a few colleagues of the prospective candidate. Here people from different, as I've mentioned, management cadres from different fields in the industry can come together to analyze the skills of a person. They might question the person on different competencies, and post this kind of a questioning, post the interview, they can come to a consensus. Each person specifically scores the answers that they ask for, and later on, as I said, they come to a group consensus. It's vital, it's quite necessary for the person who's being interviewed to be polite, to be kind to each of these people and give them equal amount of importance. The patterns and the types of interviews will be discussed with the help of diagrams in this and the next few slides. If you look at the diagram here, you see the types of interviews. Three broad types of interviews are discussed as a part of the types of interviews. The first one being the unstructured type, the next being the semi-structured, and the third being the structured. Interviewers can classify, can be classified by their degree of structure or the extent to which the interviewer plans the questions in advance and asks the same questions of all the candidates for the job. So in the next few slides, we are going to discuss each of these in detail. Here we're going to first start with the unstructured type of interviews. As the name goes, there is no particular formal structure. These are basically a method of interviews where the questions can be changed or adapted to meet the respondent's intelligence, understanding, or belief. Unlike a structured interview, they do not offer a limited preset range of answers for a respondent to choose, but instead advocate listening to how each individual person responds to the question. This method to gather information using this particular technique is fairly limited. For example, most surveys that are carried out via telephone or even in person tend to follow a particular, unstructured type of method. Outside of the sociology, the use of such interviews is quite limited. Here the questions are not planned in advance, and the interviews with different candidates may cover quite different areas, probably areas of the past history, the attitudes, or the future plans. They have a low inter-rater reliability and lowest validity. Now these two points we had discussed in a previous slide, wherein the first point required a consensus or an agreement between two or more interviewers on the same interview subject, the same candidate. The next being the lower validity. We have seen validity also as a part of some of the errors that interviews are prone to. So the validity may be the person scores well in these kind of questions, but actual job the person might not, you know, perform well, so there is a low validity. So these type of interviews have both low inter-rater reliability and the lowest validity. The reason being the questions are not strategically planned. Hence, important job related areas in an interview may not be asked, may not be uncovered, and hence may remain unexplored. And illegal questions may be asked on the spur of the moment. Some unrequired or undiscretionary questions might be asked here. Well, let's move on to the next type of interviews, which are the semi-structured kind of interviews. This particular type of job interview blends the advantages of both the structured and the unstructured interviews. Unstructured, of course, which we've discussed in the previous slide. Structured, we are going to discuss in the next couple of slides. It's essentially a hybrid or a combination of these two types of interviews. The interview has a fairly formal organization, but it allows flexibility for the interviewer in the questions used in each particular interview. A typical semi-structured interview would include a list of set questions that are asked for all the candidates, mixed in with a number of questions focused directly on the candidate's qualifications and resumes. This forms the primary theme of the particular, you know, semi-structured interview. Well, now we discuss two important elements related to semi-structured type of interviews. A semi-structured, as the name goes, that means a part of the interview is structured, the other part remaining unstructured. So it blends, it's a blended type of an interview. It blends the advantages of both structured as well as the unstructured type of interviews. It is essentially a hybrid of the two. The interview has a fairly formal kind of an organization, but it allows flexibility. It basically allows flexibility for the interviewer in the questions used in each particular interview. A typical semi-structured interview would include a list of set questions that are asked of all the candidates. Probably some examples might be like, where do you see yourself 5 years down the line? Or if given an opportunity to work with this company, what are the first three things that you would do? Such types of questions are examples of set questions, predetermined questions which are asked for all the candidates and follow a structured kind of an approach, mixed in with a number of questions focused directly on the candidate's qualifications and resume. So any question like, why is a gap present in so and so, you know, between so and so jobs, between a particular tenure, might be an example of an unstructured kind of a question. It involves some planning on the part of the interviewer, but also, you know, as we've said, allows for flexibility in precisely what the interviewer asks the candidate. Semi-structured interviews are likely to be more valid than unstructured ones, but not as valid as highly structured interviews. So those were two important aspects related to semi-structured interviews. To develop a better understanding of this kind of interviews, let us also discuss two more things. That is the themes related with these kind of interviews. While wholly structured interviews, they emphasize the same flow and questions asked of each candidate, the semi-structured interviews place more emphasis on the themes or the themed type of questions. Requirements of the position are used to establish question categories which will be covered with each candidate. Some questions are prepared. However, the flexibility is given to allow the interviewer to ask follow-ups based on a candidate's original response. We shall also focus on the benefits of this particular type of interview. The primary benefit of a semi-structured process is the flexibility that it allows relative to more formal structured interviews. This enables the hiring managers to gain more insights, in fact more useful insights into the experiences and thought of each candidate, which is especially helpful in higher level job positions. It also allows for some of the informal interpersonal advantages offered by the unstructured interview. However, the semi-structured interview does not retain the merits of organization and consistency valued in the structured interviews. So, this was about the semi-structured interview's benefits. Along with the benefits, let us look at what are the drawbacks that are, you know, there in the semi-structured interviews. The proponents of this, the structured interviews, mostly the human resource professionals, point to the concerns about using spontaneous, unscripted questions that may contribute to a lack of fairness while opening the door for possible discrimination lawsuits. So these might be some of the prominent drawbacks of unstructured or the semi-structured type of interviews. On the other hand, frontline managers often prefer unstructured interviews, suggest semi-structured interviews don't go far enough in allowing for assessment of each candidate's personal qualities and soft skills. They don't allow for natural getting to know you process that occurs in unstructured interviews. So there is a vast spectrum. If you notice, unstructured interviews are favored by people from the field who want to understand more openness, who want to understand about a person's personal qualities and soft skills, whereas the human resource managers prefer more of a structured type of interview in which there is precise things that may be asked and there needs to be fairness. So these were some of the drawbacks of the semi-structured interviews. Now there are also considerations to be looked at, that is either single versus group. So which are the kind of situations, which are the kind of scenarios where these interviews would prove to be the right fit. So semi-structured interviews can be given by a single interviewer or by an interview team. The one-on-one interview is more conducive to building rapport and creating a less tense environment for the candidate, which may allow him to show his best or her best side. A group interview approach allows for a wider range of perspectives on the candidates, but there is an increased risk of interviewers cutting into each other to ask follow-up questions to the candidates, creating a confusing situation for the candidate. So friends, these were some of the drawbacks as well as certain situations when it came to semi-structured interviews. Previously we discussed also about the benefits, about the blended nature. So through this discussion we have shed light, we've discussed a lot about this type of interviews, which is a hybrid between a structured and an unstructured type of interview. Now what remains is the structured type of interviews. Well, as the name goes, these are highly structured. They are also known as standardized interviews or a researcher administered survey. So the questions which are you know, asked, they are highly standardized, highly researched, and is a quantitative research method commonly employed in survey research. So if you've seen a survey being done, you will get to find such an interview method. The aim of this approach is to ensure that each interview is presented with exactly the same questions and in the same manner or order. This ensures that answers can be reliably aggregated and that comparisons can be made with confidence between sample subgroups or between different survey periods. Research shows conclusively that the highest reliability and validity are realized in the structured. So in the structured, these type of interviews, there is the highest reliability and validity, whereas there is a contrast that we saw in the first, that is the unstructured interviews. In this type of interview, the questions are planned in advance, hence the name structured or standardized or researcher administered. and are asked of each candidate in exactly the same way. The only difference between interviews with different candidates might be in the probes or the follow-up kind of questions. If a given candidate has not answered the question fully, interviews, that is, the probes happen if this is done so. Interviews that feature structured questions usually also provide structured rating scales on which to evaluate the applicants post the interviews. So this was a detailed explanation about structured interviews. Pre this, we had also looked at semi-structured and unstructured. So these are the patterns and types that we've all discussed in these last few slides. Now let us take a look at the phases of interviewing. Extremely important to understand what phases lie in the interviewing process. A systematic interview is based on three primary phases, which are shown here, also known as the pre-interview or the preparatory phase, during the interview, and the post-interview, which is the assessment and the decision making. Friends, each of these elements contribute vitally to the success of the interview, and weakness in any of the element will adversely affect the other parts. If the pre-interview preparatory phase is not sound in nature, then no matter how well the interview is conducted, it will have an effect on the quality of the final decision. Hence, each stage, the pre-interview, the during the interview phase and the post-interview, are extremely important and need further discussion in detail. So this slide, we are going to discuss the first phase, that is the pre-interview phase. Here there is a prerequisite for the recruitment professional to study all the available information on the prospective employee or the candidate who's come for the interview. This includes the study of the application forms or the CVs, the job description and specification, and the person specification. So all these elements need to be understood. The recruitment professional needs to determine acceptable entry levels for new staff vis-a-vis the job requirement for fully effective performance. They need to ensure that all the written tests, assessment center results, etc., are available and analyzed before the interview. This is extremely important. It acts as information, sources of information in order to make an informed decision, informed choice. In case they are using a panel, pre-decide the interview lead who will coordinate the process and ensure that all interviewers know the agreed upon ground rules and specific roles in the process. There is a need to pay particular attention to the environmental details, such as the time, such as the place, and the setting, to enable the candidates to feel as comfortable as possible. Ensure that there are no interruptions and distractions. Another important point is to prepare a coverage plan designed to elicit the maximum possible information. Having a comprehensive structure actually ensures flexibility by ensuring that all important issues will be addressed when appropriate. So this is a detailed discussion on the pre-interview, that's the preparatory phase. Next phase is that of the interview. So here we need to ensure that the atmosphere is conducive to encourage the candidates to speak freely. There's a need to introduce as a recruitment professional yourself and the other interviewers by the name and designations, and outline the scope of the interview. The interviewer also, the onus is on breaking the ice initially by indulging in some appropriate small talk. Now, small talk is some things like probably the weather, if it has been raining, like the recent Mumbai rains. So if a candidate is coming in and it's there's a heavy downpour happening outside, so you can ask the person whether it's raining heavily, whether the person managed to commute in time, and so. Stick to the agreed coverage plan and interview in turn. Ensure that there is no cross questioning so that the person being interviewed is less stressed and less, you know, confused, because cross-questioning causes confusion. Both it confuses both the interviewer, who may be pursuing a particular line of questioning, and the candidate, who may get distracted from the point of discussion. Ensure that the situation does not become a free-for-all, with each interviewer butting in as and when he or she pleases. So these are some of the really important points that need to be checked during an interview, and thus to make the interview effective. Now the interview is the crux of this particular process. So we have one more, you know, slide which is dedicated to the interview. Of course, you know, one or two more slides. So let's look at what they are. Here, as we notice, the interviewer needs to ensure that the questions which are asked are extremely well framed. So the questions should elicit, that is, should the recruiter or the interviewer should be able to obtain adequate response and evidence on the potential availability to do the required job. So the questions should be such that they get responses which are of professional, you know, which are professional in nature. They can speak about a job. Let us take an example. If a sales manager is being interviewed, questions such as what was the last, you know, slab of targets that you were able to complete in a specific quarter, what were the relevant challenges in the particular situation. So such kind of questions can elicit open answers or adequate response. Avoid hypothetical questions that have no relevance to the job. So for example, let us say if it's for a sales manager, you should ideally avoid saying, what if you were made a CEO of a company? How would you look at the sales of the company in this position or from this position? Now, this is extremely hypothetical or an imaginary kind of a question. So you need to refrain from using this type of a question. Use simple open-ended questions. Open-ended questions, in fact, elicit and provide a lot of information. The candidate can speak more. In fact, a thumb rule of an interview is that the interviewer speak less and let the candidates or the interviewees speak more, thus providing you with vital information on the competencies of a person, the technical skills of a person, the personality of a person, and other aspects of you know, the candidate. So it's extremely important that we use simple open-ended style of questioning so that the questions seem well framed and so that maximum response is elicited from our prospective employee. Let's move on. Now a few things that you should ensure that you should take care of during the course of the interview, apart from the kind of questioning are mentioned here. It's extremely important to keep open body language, to maintain eye contact and give appropriate positive feedback. This is verbally and non-verbally. Verbally you can say a yes, or if you disagree you can say a no. Non-verbally you can shake your head, nod the head in approval or in disapproval, so that the candidate understands that you are, you know, you've understood whatever has been said and there's some open kind of communication happening. This also encourages shy candidates to open up and you know, become more extrovert in the interview. It's important to take your time and use silence effectively. The candidate's body language will reveal whether they are reflecting, you know, the candidate's comment back to them in a questioning tone. So clarify and reflect by repeating this particular comment, and also ensure that the candidate does not sidetrack any particular question. It's extremely important to maintain and, you know, take care of these aspects while we are, you know, interviewing people. During the interview, a few more tips. It's extremely important to listen. This is central to interviewing. That is the good art of good interviewing, that is listening. As you elicit enough factual information to enable you to make an informed decision. The next thing is be alert to non-verbal cues. In fact, the interviewer should be an expert on body language. The interviewer should understand various elements of body language, should notice stress, should understand if the person is lying. There are certain tips in body language where one can understand if the person is lying. If the person raises the neck, or sorry, the both shoulders, and sinks in the neck, there is a good chance that the person is lying. If the person maintains continuous eye gaze, eye contact, or is not making eye contact at all, it is understood that the person is lying. If the person is touching his face or the ears, the person might seem to be stressed. If the person is crossing arms across the chest, that means the person might be disinterested. So these are certain unconscious non-verbal cues which are provided by the candidate to the interviewer. These need to be understood by, you know, studying. So the interviewer should be an expert with the non-verbal cues, with body language. Towards the end of the session, ensure that the candidate has time to clear any doubts regarding the scope of the job or organization or the growth plans, etc. Invite the candidate to ask questions, extremely important. As mentioned earlier, this will provide you with a further insight of his or her thought process. However, share data. If they ask you information, if it's confidential information, only share it on a need to know basis. A talkative interviewer has been known to reveal information on a yet to be announced manager to the candidate who worked with a competitor, leading to the deal falling through. So it's extremely important to use discretion at each stage of the interview. Finally, thank the candidate for coming and sharing information, and advise them on the next stage and the time frame of the selection process. So these are a few of the important things that one should do during the interview, and through this, you know, through these actions, one can definitely elicit a good amount of response. They might invite people to ask questions and create an effective interview situation. Well, friends, now we've reached the third phase of the interviewing, that is the post-interview assessment and decision. In this, we need to assess the candidate against the person's specifications or the scoring systems intermediately. That is, what we need to do is we need to have an understanding of how the human memory works. A lot of times human memory is notorious to be faulty. So what we need to do is, once an interview is done, we need to assess, we need to record, we need to put it into a scoring system. Here the factors that we need to look at are things like solid facts of the past behavior as indicators of motivation, attitudes, value, personal qualities and abilities in the sum of the potential to do the job. So we need to understand that if we are carrying out multiple interviews in a particular day, so we need to at least have a gap of 20 minutes in which we need to assess the delegates on these particular grounds. You need to also consider other sources. You need to gather, you know, apart from your own interview, gather from other sources, if any, about the candidate. You should also, you know, understand that the behavior shown by the candidate is artificial in the context of the interview. Probably the actual behavior might be something else, as in, like, actual behavior on field might be something different. So this is important. We need to understand that we need to incorporate evidence from all selection methods. This is what we've discussed in the previous slide. So if the person has been through an assessment center or has been through other tests, we need to gather results in order to develop a consensus or a uniform kind of a decision. We need to advise the candidates on the outcome at the appropriate time. So we need to make them understand what has happened. We need to, even for the people who've been not successful, who've not cracked the interview, we need to treat such candidates with respect. The reason being, today these are volatile times. So we never know if the people whom we've selected do not turn up, are not interested. So we need to fall back on the candidates who are very close to having cracked the interviews. So on this particular note, we end this chapter number 8, in which we've seen the sources of selection. We discussed at the start of the chapter the different sources of selection, like the different types of tests that need to be administered, the reason why tests are so important, because there is a uniformity in selecting a wide range of people. We've also looked at in detail the assessment center, the kind of tools that are used in assessment center, the kind of prerequisites that are required, the benefits of conducting assessment centers. We've also looked at the interviews, the broad types of interviews, the kind of phases, the kind of errors that happen in an interview, and how a particular recruiter can refrain or probably reduce those errors. Common or important errors like the halo effect, or the validity issues, or the interrelator problems, or the first impression error, or these being important. Finally, we saw the phases in which we saw what are the things that need to be done pre the interview, during, and of course, last few slides we discussed about what needs to be done as a care to ensure effective selection, which is post interview. So on this note, we end this particular chapter. Thank you.